Good afternoon, and welcome to another edition of Valley Voices. I'm Amy Haddon Marsh, your host, and today's show features excerpts from an interview with James Knight, filmmaker and longtime peace activist who participated in this year's Sacred Peace Walk from Las Vegas, Nevada, to the Nevada National Security Site, formerly known as the Nevada Nuclear Test Site. Nevada Desert Experience, a Catholic peace group, has sponsored these walks for 13 years. This is James Knight's sixth year on the walk. The interview was conducted at the Temple for Goddess Spirituality at Cactus Springs, Nevada. The aircraft noises you hear in the background are practice drones taking off from and landing at nearby Creech Air Force Base.
My name is James Knight, and let's see, why I'm here. It's hard to talk about. I'm here because I care about the issues that this walk is addressing, the issue of drone warfare, which is dangerous to our world and our country in so many ways, and the issue of nuclear weapons at the Nevada nuclear test site, which has been going on for a long time. It's a poisoned place in our planet. It's stolen from the Western Shoshone people. They're dumping nuclear waste there. They are still doing nuclear testing despite the test ban. They just do what are called sub-threshold nuclear tests there, but they are still detonating new nuclear weapons. They just don't go full fusion. It's not a full fusion explosion, but they're still testing the arsenal and testing new weapons out there, which is still very expensive. And so it's a focus for certain issues out here. And this walk is unique in that it's focused on the sort of the spiritual reasons for or religious reasons for doing this kind of work. There's a lot of prayer and meditation on this walk and walking, of course, which are all things that center me and make it easier for me to confront these situations as directly as we do. I remember, this is my sixth year, I remember my first year doing this walk, coming around the big corner toward Creech Air Force Base and seeing the drones flying in the air. And I'd been told we would see them, but somehow it just, I didn't really realize how impactful that would be to see these weapons that are such a menace to so many people in the world and have caused so much trauma for the survivors and so much death. To see those flying in the air, it was really profound. So to do that and to go to the Nevada nuclear test site, which is also a place of, you know, it's a very dark place. And I'm a filmmaker. A few years ago I made a film about this walk, and I have a friend who makes his own musical instruments, and I wanted a sound for these places, so that when the walkers arrive at these places, there's a sound that you hear on the soundtrack. And I said, you know, I want it to be like they're arriving at the gates of Mordor, just to use a pop culture reference. And he said, oh, and he had created this crazy instrument out of a tea kettle, but it made this enormous rattling sound, like horn sound. And it just perfectly captured how I feel being at these places. So the walking and the meditation and the spiritual focus of this walk, particularly with Johnny Bob and his morning ceremonies and just his presence on this walk, blessing the food, and those things helped me to have the strength to confront these things. These are not things that people really want to deal with. I think in our meeting last night, a lot of there was a lot of upsetness being expressed. And I think a lot of that is just the trauma of people who are, for the first time, coming face to face with these things.
What kind of upsetness was happening at that meeting?
There was conflict last night in the meeting. And some of the conflict came from people who were very new to this, who were really upset. Their position was, we have to do something. And it's like, and you're talking to activists who've been doing something for 40 years, in some cases like Brian Terrell, doing it full time for 60 years. But to me, what I heard was the trauma. I didn't feel personally attacked by it or insulted by it. I was hearing the trauma. We've got to do something. I think it just really impacts people who are open. If you open your heart and come here, it's a hard go. Being confronted with these things that are abstract, they're just statistics or news stories that you hear, and you come here and you see the drones and you go to the test site, and you're just in such close proximity to really terrible things that we pay for and vote for in our culture. And when you commit yourself to taking action against those things, and you do it in community, you have to open your heart in a certain way to let that in and to address it in a clear way. And that opening and that commitment makes for meaningful experiences in community, which makes for very meaningful and deep community connections. And in 1986, I walked across the country. About 500 people made it the whole way. About 2,000 people walked at different times from Los Angeles, over the Rocky Mountains, across the plains, to New York City, and then down to Washington, D.C. It was over 3,000 miles of walking. And it took us 9 months, and the founding organization, which was kind of a paternalistic organization, had everything planned out, wasn't interested in any input from the people who actually showed up to do the walk, and promptly went bankrupt 2 weeks into the walk. And left us in the Mojave Desert, landscape very similar to this, and said, everybody go home. And we got creative, and there were a lot of support vehicles that were about to be repossessed, and certain people hid the distributor caps so we wouldn't lose our water truck. I mean, things that we needed to survive. Mm-hmm. Because a large group of people, and it ended up being about 500, 1,500 people left Los Angeles, and about 1,000 people left when the founding organization went bankrupt. Because it was no longer going to be the, as some people joked, Club Med for Peace that the founding organization had promised. It was going to be a much more difficult experience. And people stayed and reorganized, and we contacted the fundraising groups that had been fundraising for the walk, and said, "Please don't leave. Please keep raising money." And we kept going, and I think we took like 2 weeks off to reorganize and make it more democratic, and. You know, the walk was a much more interesting walk as a result. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of people who would not have gone on the walk that it ended up being would never have shown up for that walk. And afterwards they said, you know, it was good that I was lied to. because I lived this comfortable suburban life, and I never would have done something like this. Wouldn't have thought of it if they hadn't been comforted by the fairy tale that the founding organization had provided. So that made for a very diverse group of people. It wasn't, you know, a bunch of hardcore backpackers or survivalists. It was really a wide range of people who ended up coming along, which made for a really strong community. And the 9 months together of 24/7 working for something bigger than ourselves and really addressing hard issues, not only of the issue that we were protesting or the positive thing, nuclear disarmament, that we were pushing for, but just being in community in a non-hierarchical way and with all those differences that we had. But keeping the community together because of the bigger idea that you all share made for just an incredibly strong group of people and a strong sense of community. So for me, when I do political action now, that's what I'm looking for, is connecting with community. Because it's from that that I get the grounding that I need and the, what's the word, not desire, but the inspiration, I guess, to work for these issues that seem overwhelming. But when you have a strong community, that will pull me back even when I'm feeling hopeless about the world. I'm feeling pretty darn hopeless about the world right now and the human experiment.
Talk about that.
Even though I'm here on this wonderful faith-based walk, I'm basically an atheist. So my belief is in human potential. And it's very discouraging right now. Fascism is on the rise, not just in our country, but all over the world. It was disappointing to see Donald Trump elected, but it's even more disappointing to see his numbers hang in there, his approval rating hang in there through everything that he's done. And I start to wonder if people really do want a better world, as I define it, and as the people in my community of activists define it. So that's a difficult thing to overcome. But for me, being with people who I consider to be sane, who see what I see in the world, that is enough reason to come and be a part of something, even if you're feeling hopeless in the moment. I mean, in terms of hopefulness, one of the things I hang on to, Chris Hedges tells a wonderful story about, you probably know this story, about being in Berlin around the time that the Berlin Wall fell. And he was a reporter there, and he was going on both sides, East and West Berlin, talking to the guards, talking to the protesters. The hopeful thing that he says is that there wasn't one person he talked to who said, oh yeah, this is about to happen. This is about to come down. This wall is about to come down. Not one person, not in security, in the government, among protesters, no one. And he said within days it was down. So I like to think that we never know how close we are to really turning a corner. So that's one source of hope that I have. And these communities are the other source of hope that I have.
You're listening to Valley Voices and excerpts from an interview with longtime peace activist and filmmaker James Knight, recorded at the Sacred Peace Walk from Las Vegas, Nevada to the Nevada National Security Site during Holy Week this year.
Talk about what it was like for some people at the end of the Great Peace March when the community dispersed.
At the end of the Great Peace March, it was November 15th. Many thousands of people showed up at the end. I had people come up to me and say, who I didn't recognize at all and say, we're here, like, and I'm like, okay. And they said, remember, you know, you talked to us.
Wait, something's coming up for you. What's coming up?
It's an emotional memory. Because you do this work. And you don't know who you're reaching. And I was blessed at the end of that walk to have a very vivid experience of having reached people. And, you know, people come up to me and say, you talked to me outside that gas station in some small town somewhere, and you said, join us, come to the end. And there they were. And I must have talked to thousands of people, and who knows who was there, but they were there. So it was a powerful ending, but it was also, it really, for me, it felt like a death. That last day after the big rally and the big gathering, when the tents were coming down and we'd done this every day, one of my concerns going on that walk was that I would feel unrooted and I'd wake up in the night and not know where I was. And I never once felt disoriented on that walk because our community was moving along with us, even though we were in a different place every day. And then that last morning when you see the tents coming down, you know they're not going to get set up again. And you just watch this community dissipate. Sometimes I've had the experience when someone close to me dies and you just want to reject the news. You want to believe something else against all logic. That was the feeling I had of just wanting to call it back and make it not stop. And we just didn't know at that time how we were going to ever recreate that feeling that we had together, or if we could. Mm-hmm. It felt impossible. And so it hit a lot of people really hard. Re-entry into society, that's when I got disoriented. I would wake up at night and I would see my tent walls, and then they would square off and form the room that I was in. I hadn't lived in hard angles for 9 months. And in Africa, they have an expression that living is round. They have round architecture a lot in Africa, and they say that living is round. And we all lived in these little domes. It affected some people very profoundly. Several people took their lives after the walk because re-entering into society, into a community that wasn't like the community that we had created together, and going back to jobs that didn't have that resonance for us. It didn't feel important the way that had felt day to day, as hard as it was, walking, you know, 20 miles a day in all kinds of weather. As hard as it was, it was so rewarding. I often tell people say, oh my God, it's so hard. And I say, it's the easiest peace work I've ever done. Mm-hmm. Because people came to us. What we were doing was so big that the idea of walking across the country was so big to people that they would come regardless of their politics and talk to us. And then you're having a political conversation with people. And the peace work did itself. Just based on the size of what we had taken on. And then suddenly you're back in the world and you have to make money and you have to have a place to live, and you're no longer in that kind of close community. Some people went to live in community, entered communes, people started other walks. I had the good fortune, there was a woman named Kathy Zoitland who shot a documentary about that walk across the country called Just One Step, and she had been there the whole 9 months. I had left my film career and didn't want anything to do with it. Wow. But afterwards, I said, well, I'm an editor if you need an editor. And so I ended up cutting the documentary, which was very healing for me because I got to go from the first day to the last day through Kathy's footage and not only relive it through the footage, but structure a story out of it, structure my, you know, together we structured our story about what that had meant. And that was really, that was like my therapy after the walk. So I felt blessed that I had that.
And you're an atheist.
And I'm, oh, but I felt blessed. Yes, I think atheists can feel blessed. I certainly feel blessed. When I say atheist, I should clarify that by atheist, I mean it in a really strict sense that I don't believe in a creator God. It's not that I don't believe in spirit. It's not that I don't believe in a whole realm of world that science hasn't learned how to describe yet. It's more the idea of a God that made us and looks out for us. That's what I object to. But I often feel blessed.
Welcome to this day. Welcome to this day. Welcome to this day. Welcome to this day. This healing, this healing, this healing day. This healing, this healing, this healing day.
Yay!
Can I sing it for
you? Yeah.
It goes, welcome to this, thank you for this day, O Lord, thank you for this day. Thank you for this day, O Lord, thank you for this day. This beautiful, this beautiful day. This beautiful, this beautiful, this beautiful day. Yeah.
Also, yeah.
Yeah, maybe from St. Isidore.
Yeah. Like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That was beautiful. Thank you.
That was
strong. It's a good morning song.
You've been listening to Valley Voices on KDNK. I'm Amy Haddon Marsh.